Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes checking in here on a Sunday night for your Monday morning delivery. Got a lot to discuss here, as this past weekend had the two biggest MMA promotions going to work. UFC Fight Night 202, I believe. Well, you know, safer to just say Fight Night, but I like to get it right. I think it was, yeah, UFC Fight Night 202, also known as UFC Vegas Plus 60, also known as UFC Vegas 49, UFC Fight Night Makachev Green. Can you believe all that goes? One has to go through just to sort it out. One's a hashtag. The other ones work for the international audience. The other ones work for the media outlets here. Ridiculous, huh?
Very.
Yeah. We also had Bellator in. They had a early offering this past weekend. Bellator 275 was in Dublin, Ireland. So we'll go over that for sure. We had a title fight out there with a well-known fighter, Gegard Mousasi. He was defending his title against Austin Vanderford. So we'll go over those results. Of course, the latest news in mixed martial arts. And kind of, we'll kind of stick to that. I'll tell you what, there really wasn't any major sports now that kind of football's over and the madness hasn't started. Baseball's in a strike still, I guess, technically. So we don't even get any spring training stuff, and of course NHL and NBA will heat up later on in the spring. All right, Phil Mr. Wonderful Davis will join us on today's show. So he's got a fight coming up on March 12th, Julius Anglicus, so we'll catch up with him regarding that. Now, it's MMA Junkie Radio on a Sunday night for your Monday delivery, February 28th. All right, Goes, you know, last time we were kind of feeling somber because things between Russia and Ukraine had heated up. It was on TV 24/7. And, of course, we had just found out about the news of our colleague John Morgan. He was going to move on from MMA Junkie. By the way, Saturday was his last day. So that blue shirt, I don't know if you saw this picture with Ioli, him and Bruce Buffer. I thought it was a really cool pick that they took. That was John's last assignment under the MMA Junkie banner. And we certainly plan on addressing that in full when we know exactly where he's headed. So we can obviously wish him well there, but kind of give a little bit of a good recap to his career, you know, as our colleague and friend for that whole time that he was here. I'm a little bit more upbeat now, Goes. It sounds like Russia and Ukraine are going to kind of start negotiating a little bit tomorrow. Of course, we're not a new show, but I just think that I think honestly it affects the mood of everyone. And Goes, let me tell you something. This affects sports too. Did you hear that Alexander Volkov, who's supposed to headline in London in a few weeks, he may not be allowed in because the British Ministry of Sports or whatever they're called, you know, there's a lot of this stuff going on where flights are being frozen, businesses are being frozen and sanctioned. And, you know, some athletes obviously have concern about their loved ones in Ukraine. And this is a worldwide, it's a global affair.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And you're right. It does kind of affect your mood. Just seeing, you know, it does in a good way and a bad way. It's sad to see what's happening. And it's sad to see people's lives being lost, but there are some uplifting stories that you just take for granted, like humanity, you know, and just people really, really putting their country first. And, you know, you see Lomachenko and the Klitschko brothers. That's pretty cool, man. That's an awesome thing to see, just that kind of passion for your country and your independence. But you're right, it does kind of set the tone for the day.
Well, you're right. You know, I only heard about Loma today, and the Klitschko brothers have definitely been on my radar. Stitch Duran, great friend of the show. I mean, he's almost like family to us. You know, that's how close we are with him. We know his family, and we've spent time with him, and he had a nice post about the Klitschkos. You know, those are like kids to him or nephews to him because he worked with them for a few years. And one of them, Vitaly, if I'm not mistaken, is the mayor of Kiev, which is the capital of Ukraine. And so you see these images and these videos of them basically armored up and ready to fight. So along with Yaroslav Amosov, who is the Bellator welterweight champion, same thing, he's there as well. You know, this is starting to now transcend into combat sports.
Right. Yeah, it's had its effect. And you're right, with all the no-fly zones and all that being added in. There was another sport, too, that was refusing. I can't remember which one it was. If it comes to me, I'll mention it. But yeah, a lot is starting to affect the sports world.
Their patriotism and their bravery, it just can't be brushed aside. It commands respect, and I admire not only them, but of course all the Ukrainian people. That there's been families that have been separated, and I really hope that there may be a resolution to all this tomorrow. But, you know, obviously some lives have been lost and some lives have been altered forever. Our thoughts and prayers are with them. And but again, this has affected our sport, and be on the lookout for that card in March, I believe, where the main event may be affected. Now, one other thing, you know, like Aeroflot is a sponsor of Manchester United, and I think they sponsor like their warm-up kit or whatever, and I think Manchester United has seized ties with them. I heard one other thing too. Oh, Roman Abramovich, the billionaire owner of Chelsea. Shout out to those guys and Liverpool. They had an interesting game today for the Carabao Cup final. Congrats to Liverpool for winning that. But he has basically, on a technicality, kind of withdrawn himself as the owner and kind of given himself another title, because again, these sanctions may bleed over into his business dealings. Anyway, I definitely don't want to spend too much time on it, but I also didn't want you all to think that this isn't just a global affair. It has kind of come over to sports and as well combat sports as well. Now, let's start with Bellator. So Bellator took place on Friday, and eight-hour time difference. So in case you were thrown off like I was, I knew it had started goes earlier in the day, and I was trying to time it so I could kind of catch the last couple fights, including Leah McCourt and Sinead Kavanaugh, their flyweights in the women's MMA division, featherweights. And then I wanted to watch Musasi defend against Austin Vanderford, and I timed it wrong, goes where I got distracted. I don't know what happened. Next thing you know, Junkie's blowing up Twitter, like they always do, and I hadn't programmed in my mind to not look at Twitter. Boom, I see the result. I'm like, that one kind of stung a little bit. Did you catch any of the event live, or did you have to go back and watch the affair?
Yeah, just the last two fights live, and then I had to go back and watch the whole thing again.
Yeah, so we'll take it one by one. Sinead O'Connor, Sinead Kavanaugh defeated Leah McCourt. And big win for her. She now has a couple of ranked wins. This is honestly a division where you can go from like honorable mention to number three, you know, with a 2-0 record in 2021, because Bellator houses some of those fighters and so does the UFC, but they don't fight very often and there's just not many of them. And so, you know, you don't progress your way through that division. There's only like five on each side. Maybe Bellator might have 8 or 10 or whatever. So you're always going to be fighting a ranked fighter, and that's what happened there. And then, of course, we get to the main event, Gegard Mousasi. Just, boy, I hate to say it because Austin's been such a nice guy. It's been fun to talk to him, but he got walloped, man, by Gegard Mousasi. Gegard Mousasi immediately proclaiming goes that he's the best middleweight in the world. A, what'd you think of the fight? B, do you agree with that statement?
I mean, the fight was quick, you know, and I feel like when Austin shot in, if you look at his head, I think he was already dazed at that point. It was a great performance for Gegard Mousasi. There's no way around all that. And Austin Vanderfort, I think, is a lot better than people give him credit for. But if you look up and down who is the Israel Adesanya has fought, if you just go the last 5 years, right, at who Gegard's fought, who Israel Adesanya's fought, those are monsters that Israel Adesanya is facing, dude. Monsters. And he's putting them away. So, man. I mean, I'm not saying Gegard Mousasi can't win that fight. He can definitely win that fight. It would definitely be competitive, but right now, based on what they've done, I think Israel Adesanya is in the lead.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, it's not even close, but it was worth exploring and researching because Gegard's to be respected. Make no mistake, this guy is a legitimate middleweight. He also won the Strikeforce light heavyweight title, and he's beaten some great light heavyweights, and he even fought at heavyweight, for crying out loud. He even dabbled a little bit versus some K1 fighters because he's got that kind of stand-up. He won there. So in combat sports alone, Gegard Mousasi is awesome. You know, great, great fighter, Dutch fighter, and he's done a lot. So that commands the type of respect where you can't just go, shut up, Gegard. You have to go back and look at it, you know, because like I say, he's beating some really, really good fighters, and he finishes a lot of them. But once you do, yeah, you come up on Izzy. Izzy's 11-0 with 4 title defenses. I'm not going to give him that interim title defense. You know where I stand on that. But he's got 4 adequate, proper title defenses. He's 11-0 in the UFC as a middleweight. His only loss, not just in the UFC, but ever, is to Jan Blachowicz, who at the time was the light heavyweight champion. All respect there. And then you got Robert Whittaker goes, who's also 11-0 as a middleweight, should Israel Adesanya be erased from our memories, which he's not. So his only 2 losses, he's really 11-2. Israel Adesanya gave him those 2 losses. One of them was a split, by the way. And, you know, man, those are 2 amazing resumes. But after that, there's an argument that Gegard could be number 3 or number 4 or whatever. And that's my job as rankings chair to kind of piece that together. I've already made my decision. In fact, I'll give you guys an early preview. I can move them past Brunson goes, but Cannoneer's been kind of hot, and so has Vittori. And the problem with Mousasi, most of his resume is kind of about 5-7 years ago when he blasted through, Chris Weidman and Lyoto, I believe, was another one.
Yeah.
And they...
I think he had a Uriah Hall loss in there somewhere.
Yeah, he did. He also avenged it. But he had a nice run, you know, a while back. And not to say that the run he's on, but he also lost the title while he was at Bellator. Rafael Lovato Jr. gave him an L. And, you know, you can't compare Jan Blachowicz, the UFC light heavyweight champion, giving you an L versus Rafael Lovato. That's not to disrespect Rafael Lovato, but he's not regarded as a top middleweight, you know. So, again, after researching it, I don't mind him throwing it out there. It's worth it. A lot of people won't research it like us, and they'll just go, oh, yeah, okay, I remember him. And, you know, he blasted some fools, and, you know, I'll take him at his word. But, no, I think Israel and Whittaker for sure stand above Gegard right now. And then I think Gegard is in that Vittori and Cannoneer run, you know what I mean? He's Gegard's 4-1 in his last 3 years. That loss to Rafael Lovato, he's got those defenses versus Salter and Vanderford. But now you look at Cannoneer, man, you know, Cannoneer's got some really, really good wins. They're just a little bit higher level than Gegard. So now if Gegard were to go, hey, let's put our complete resumes next to each other, then yeah, he's in the argument against, again, probably all of them, but maybe Whittaker and Izzy. But that's not what he's talking about. I think he wants to be pinpointed right now at this moment in the rankings, and we just can't do that.
Right. Yeah, no, and I agree with that.
Yeah, but it was one heck of an effort against Austin Vanderfort. I think Austin Vanderfort will definitely be back. He just ran up against the freight train, man.
You know, in a way that I don't want to say it's the best thing that could have happened to him, but him getting kind of run over that way helps him out in the sense that I think his journey back won't be as long, because it's not like you could say you watched the whole fight and he was completely dominated where you go, he has no business being there. Right. He kind of just got caught, you know, early on and didn't really get into any type of flow. So I think a couple wins and he could maybe be right back there.
Here's some of those wins I was talking about earlier. So even before the Lovato loss, you know, he beat up Rory McDonald pretty good, Rafael Carvalho, Alexander Shlemenko. But in the UFC goes, when he exited, he beat Thiago Mejia Santos. That dude's no joke, all right? Finished him. Vitor Belfort, finished him. Uriah Hall, finished him. And Chris Weidman, finished him. I mean, he crushed Chris Weidman, remember, in Buffalo with the knees. So I was shocked when he left the UFC. I thought, dude, you're right on the cusp of a title shot there. What are you doing? You know, but he wanted, I think he was getting more upfront money at Bellator, and he's never been shy to move around from promotion to promotion. So that's that. But yeah, unfortunately, that kind of comes back to haunt you a little bit when you are looking for those types of labels, you know. And if I don't know if you heard the post fight. By the way, have you ever heard Dan Tom do a impression of Gegard Mousasi? It's pretty good.
No, is it?
Yeah. He just kind of goes, yeah, fuck it, man. You know, I smashed them. What do you want? What do you want? You know, fuck it. If the fans don't like it, they can suck it. I don't know. It's hilarious. He does real good with it. Shout out to the Protect Your Neck podcast. But so he was standing there and he did say, I think Monster was one and another sponsor. It could be that maybe he's appealing to, you know, why is he maybe getting more love when it comes to sponsors? And maybe that's why he throws out that comment of where you're at. But again, you know, and I hate to keep harping on this. I would imagine in the MMA space, a lot of the sponsors that are going to back you, the big ones he may be looking for, they may want to attach themselves more to UFC fighters, who knows? So, yeah, you can get your own sponsorship, but as far as that monthly stipend stuff, I don't know how lucrative that is for Bellator fighters. It's only lucrative on fight night, it appears to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, didn't it look like Austin Vanderford's like an oversized welterweight / undersized middleweight, and Gegard is a proper middleweight who's dabbled. Not only dabbled, but actually succeeded at light heavyweight. I mean, what's the difference there?
I think he could do it. You know, I think his legs are pretty big. I mean, that's where I'd start shaving off some pounds. But I don't know. Yeah, I did notice he's a little bit smaller.
Yeah. We turned the page, and on Saturday night, we had UFC Makhachev versus Green, UFC Fight Night 202, whatever you want to call yourself. We'll go from top to bottom. From bottom to top real fast. Carlos Hernandez defeated Victor Altamirano via split decision there. Ramiz Brahimov defeated Michael Gilmore. Submission rear naked choke there. Jonathan Martinez defeated Alejandro Perez. Terrence McKinney defeated Fares Zirin. Josiane Nunes defeated Ramona Pascal. And Ignacio Bahamondes defeated Rong Zhu. Any thoughts on any of those fights on the undercard goes?
I liked Rong's fight, and I was wrong on that one as well. But you?
You went with he's the one that faced Bahamondes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, from Chile. He just wanted to correct that joke. You know, I like Bahamondes. He looked good. And I kind of had picked him, and the sharps were on him too. In fact, again, shout out to Dan, Tom, and Chris from Wales. They had a really, really good night. It was kind of chalk heavy a little bit. For those that don't know what that means, it means favorites were, you know, basically doing their job. They're beating up on the underdog. So if you ever hear someone go, let's see, like a real good team like Duke in college basketball against Appalachian State, and if you hear someone go, oh, give me Duke to win the game, no points, well, you're chalk, basically. They'll go, oh, man, you're chalk. Meaning, duh, we all know Duke's going to be Appalachian State, but can they beat them by 30? That's the decision, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever hear that term, that's what that means, folks. Yeah, I thought there was some good action, but it's still – you feel like you're watching the 50th through 80th top bantamweight, flyweight, featherweight, you know, you don't really feel like you're getting there until you get to the main card to maybe some of the top 20 fighters. That's the problem with some of these cards that the UFC has. There's a lot of new names, man.
Terrence McKinney was fun to watch.
Yeah, he was.
Can't wait to see him back again.
Yeah, he was. Not all, you know, not all. Yeah, there's a few there, obviously, that have done this a few times. Or if they've done it, they've been real quiet about it. So they just kind of get lost in the shuffle. Man, there's no more important question than when Michael Bisping says, what's next? If you can attach a name to that, along with some sort of a really cool shout out and just something that makes us remember you a little bit more power to you. All right. I think Phil Davis is close, ready to go. Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Phil Davis. We haven't caught up with him in a while. He's got a fight versus Julius Anglicus, and it's coming up here on March 12th. Of course, Bellator on Showtime with a 9 p.m. start time. For the main card, he's in the co-main event. I plan on asking him about that if he's tripping over that. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. Another MMA superstar is landing here on Junkie Radio. It's Phil Davis. Former Bellator light heavyweight champion, former UFC title contender. What's up, Phil? How are you?
Hey, what's going on?
How often do you tell people, I'm wonderful, when they ask you how you're doing?
You know, I catch myself, and it's kind of one of those things. I generally just say that, but then it just kind of sounds too on brand. So I have to tone it back to I'm good.
Gotcha. All right. I'm a little pissed off, and I'm going to tell you why. I don't understand why Phil Davis isn't the main event. Now, all respect to Borix, you know, and his opponent, but you're Phil Davis. And I went back to look at the resume one more time just to make sure I wasn't talking out of my ass. But those skins you got on the wall speak for themselves, along with the fact that you're a former champ. Are you disappointed by that?
Not really. You know, I've been fighting long enough to generally not care about things like that. I love my job wherever they put me on the card.
Would the fact that you get paid more money to fight in a 5-round fight justify the extra 2 rounds that are kind of like wear and tear for your body and possible damage, but you're not fighting for a title. So, you know, do those even out? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm always down with more money. That's cool. But, Bellator is a great company. They've been great to me. And, you know, I trust them. They do what they do. And they place me where they place me on the card. I really haven't had too many issues with that in the past. I always feel like I get my opportunity to shine. So, I'm thankful.
If there's an MMA Hall of Fame one day and you get in it, would you want to go in as a Bellator fighter or a UFC fighter? I ask only because after your last fight, you now have 14 fights with Bellator versus the 13 you had with the UFC. I know it's kind of fictional or whatever. It's not like in pro football where the player has to decide, you know, what team he wants to represent. But
wow. Man, you really hit me with one there. That's a good question. That is a really good question. I've never thought of that. I think I'd rather go in as a Bellator fighter. I enjoy Bellator. I believe they take care of their fighters. I love the organization. And, I also appreciated my time in UFC. I enjoyed my time there. I think Bellator does a lot of things right, and that's how I would like to be remembered.
What about your contract situation? Where do you stand? Could you ever go back? A lot of fighters have gone back and forth. Dan Henderson once, I think, went from UFC to Strikeforce and then back to the UFC. Do you have an open dialogue like that? Would you even explore that if you felt like your time at Bellator had run out?
As much as I enjoy Bellator, I don't think that there necessarily has to be a hardcore, like, this is my only brand. This is the only flag I'll ever fight under. But at the same time, I don't think that anything's necessarily broken or missing from where I am right now. And so I can't foresee that happening. But if it does, I'm not going to fight against that. I'm not going to say, no, well, Bellator is the only place I can ever fight again. I'm not going to stand in the way of that at all. But I'll be open to it and fluid to change. But right now, I'm happy where I'm at. You know what? It's funny you say that because I completely forgot Dan went from UFC Strikeforce then back in the UFC.
Yeah.
And if I ever did that, I imagine I'd grab a couple more wins in that organization. And you and I would be having this same question again. Where would I go down in the Hall of Fame?
Maybe that for now you just go in with Penn State until you can figure out the answer that has to do with UFC Bellator. But here's why it's also valid. I guess I don't know if you tap danced around the contract question, or you know if you didn't want to answer it, or if you didn't want to answer. But here's why I think it's valid in going over why I felt like it was a little bit of a disrespect that you weren't main event. I mean, it stands out. The fight against Glover Teixeira is a win in your favor. He is the current champ. So it's a valid question, I think, you know, for us to ask about free agency. Yeah. Would you ever go back? Things like that.
No, there's questions that are off limits. I don't think that was even close to it. I think that was right up in the alley of a great question. And not to mention, you know, you have the current champion over there with I think that was a unanimous decision loss there. You know, man, I think about that sometimes, but, you know, right now, the thing that is pressing me is I'm like, this Joker Nemkov is something else. He's tough, and he got a win over me, and that doesn't sit well with me. I'm over here right now, and he is here, and I got to get this Joker or get the man to get him. So.
Well, it's good to have options, but at the same time, you're also 37. And I wanted to ask you, I'm probably going to assume that you started, just to make it easy, wrestling at 7. So between wrestling and MMA, that's 30 years. How's your body holding up? Do you see even more fights where you could maybe get that Joker? And then if a possibility came up, go after Teixeira or one or both? I don't know. What you like? How much longer do you want to do this?
Right. Luckily, I started at 13.
Okay.
I didn't think it was a blessing then. But, you know, wrestling against guys who did start at 5, did start at 7. So I got a few less miles on me. you know, I honestly, my thing as far as when I'm going to retire, I try to leave that up to my body, how I feel, and ultimately my passion. If my passion for the sport drops or begins to wane, I'm not going to stay in there for a paycheck. I'm going to find another way to make a living. I'm not going to try to compete in a sport where there's a possibility that someone wants to win more than me. So, at this point, I'm right as rain, but I won't sacrifice my performance or my legacy or my brand. Just to stay in there as much as I can.
So, Phil, in this interview, we've kind of referenced titles, money. What would you say is your biggest motivation right now at this point in your career? Is it the titles? Is it money? What is it?
Well, I think the easier target would be the title. You get one, you get the other. But truthfully,
yes.
It is definitely it's definitely the title because. You know, I'm intrinsically motivated. I'm motivated by the opportunity to train my best, perform at my best, and showcase my best work every time I step in the cage. So, you know, there's a reason why the highest paying guys, because they show out. They do, you know, amazing things, and they're creative with their work, and they entertain. And that's what I want to strive to do is continue to put on good performances and, you know, create new ways and new avenues to beat guys.
Fresh matchups, rematches, which Phil Davis, like, is there a difference in that for you as far as when you get off the phone and you have your matchup, which one kind of makes you happier?
I like fresh matchups. Rematches can be a little difficult. You look a lot back at the, you referenced the first match, and it doesn't typically go that way. A lot of moving parts, and you're hoping that they stay the same, but they haven't. And so it's a very interesting thing. Fresh opponent, I love that. Up-and-coming guy, I love that. You know, I always remember what it feels like to be that guy getting a hold of someone who's higher ranked, or, you know, you're looking to advance your career based on where someone else is. And I use that as my motivation, you know, keeping that hunger.
Julius Anglicus will be looking to, I guess, kind of get one over on your name. That's I'm sure that's kind of a motivation as well. He's kind of basically trying to not steal, but step over you, because you're Phil, Mr. Wonderful Davis, former Bellator champion with a lot of skins on his wall, like Gorgeous George just said earlier in the interview.
Right, absolutely. That's the name of the game. Is finding out how good you are, and once you're the champion, keeping that bad boy and improving how dominant you can be. And I'm standing in this man's way of becoming a champion. So that's the thing that gets me out. Is that this guy wants to make a name off you, and you my friend, are going to disrupt that.
Just to close, man, let's go over this resume. It's really amazing. So, Lyoto Machida, Liam McGarry, King Mo, Emmanuel Newton, Glover Teixeira, Vinny Magalhaes won an M1 title. So, I'm going to throw his name in there.
Heck yeah.
And Brian Stan, all former champions or current champions of major belts in the sport of mixed martial arts. And we got to give love to Alex Gustafson, Rogério Nogueira, that's Little Nog, and even some of the other fighters that may have come up short, Linton Vassell, you know, in their quest to win titles. Yoel Romero, silver medalist in wrestling.
I love him.
So that's quite an amazing resume, and I guess that's why I really was pushing back on Bellator a little bit. No disrespect to Burnell and Borix, but I thought Phil Davis should be the main event here.
Man, it's so I truthfully don't go through that list and tell myself and really think back against some of those tough victories. I don't do that nearly enough. Hearing you say it, I was like, oh man, yeah, that was a tough fight.
you're feeling it, right?
Yeah, all of those dudes are tough. Yeah, and Yeah, you know, I feel like I've done well. Just some to my credit, but mostly not. Just to the grace of God, I've been able to stay healthy. You know, that is the name of the game in the fight game. Just being healthy enough to be in there and compete. And I've just been blessed to be able to be competing at the highest level for so long. And yeah, man, I'm thankful. Shout out to all those guys.
Yeah, hopefully George and Ghost fired you up for your workout here in a few minutes, and you'll go a little extra hard. But yeah, I mean that it speaks for itself. Hell, you beat a guy so impressively that he relocated from Sweden to San Diego just to train with you and learn with you in Gusty, you know. So that's respect there. He learned something that night. He was like, oh man, you know, if you can't beat him, join him. And I know you guys were training partners for a while.
Oh, man. That was one of the best things I can point to that happened to my entire fight career is training with Alexander Gustafson. Because, he was going to be great all by himself. And it takes a lot of humility to say, I'm going to train with you. You know, you just beat me, but I'm going to train with you. And it was crazy because we started talking backstage and our coaches came over and they started talking. I think they were like, what are you guys doing? You're not going to fight, are you? And we were just kicking it, you know? And so our coaches started talking. We were all just having a good time enjoying Abu Dhabi. And they're like, yeah, we should train together. yeah, we should train together. Thinking it would never happen, actually, but man, I probably gained more from Alexander Gustafsson than he got from me. You know, his shot defense and his offensive wrestling is really tough now. And I still feel like I gained more from him. He keeps his punches. You know, sometimes in basketball they say a guy's 6'7", but he plays like he's 7 foot. The guy has 82-inch reach, 83-inch reach, and he fights so much longer. He fights very long, you know. He has a super long jab, and he's constantly pumping it, and he has a very long uppercut. Probably one of the best uppercuts I've seen in the game. He's finished more than a couple of guys with it. The one that comes to mind is Glover Teixeira, just a super long uppercut. Just from the range that I would say, don't do it. That's a bad option. That's a terrible idea. And he nails people with it over and over again. And so, man, just having a guy like that in the room that can do that, put that kind of danger in you, every training session, you learn so much. I mean, granted, that is a lesson that you learn the hard way, but that is the lesson I want to learn and practice. And I mean, I've gained just that alone so much. He has a very like wiry kind of frame, not super strong, obviously strong, but not like you know, your Anthony Rumble Johnsons of the world or your Yoel Romero. But very wiry strong, and he has so few holes that in order just to get one over on him in training, you have to dig into your best bag of tricks to get stuff going, get some good positive momentum. So I anything he gained from me, you could have it, because I feel like I gained so much from him.
Did you ever go to Sweden to visit him?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. It was I went over. Why not go over? So we both fought in Sweden together twice, and I went back to Sweden to help him train, I think, for the Jones 2 card.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels like we're picking on poor Glover here, mentioning your win and then his win. But it's true, because the other day I was looking at Gusty's resume. His last two wins are Blachowicz and Teixeira, the last two champions in the UFC. Yep. Now he's up at heavyweight. He's got Ben Rothwell coming up in May. So yeah, all the love to Teixeira. He's the man at 42. Pretty amazing what he's done. I'm sure you probably tip your hat to him as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy to be to reach that point at any point in your career. You got to be tough, but to reach that point at 42, it's about managing your training correctly. You just can't go as hard as you could when you're, you know, 26, 27, 28. Yeah, shout out to him, man. He's still in there, getting high quality wins over high quality guys the hard way, knocking them out, TKO, submission. He's the man. He's the man.
Last question. This is back to wrestling. I held on to what you said. March Madness is coming up, right? And that's obviously the wrestling version of March Madness, the basketball tournament. Mm-hmm. You won that that tournament. And I wanted to ask you, do you think anybody that hears this interview, that they're taking their young kids to wrestling, you know, I could see a dad going, wait a minute, my kid's 5 or 6 or 7. Why am I hauling them all over town and getting them this experience when this young man started at 13? Is there something to maybe like – maybe 13 is a better age than 5, 6, or 7, are you an anomaly? Like, what would you say? And it really is a serious question. I know that there's not like head trauma or nothing, but still, you know, the cutting of the weight, the winning and the losing and all that shit.
There's two things, but what I think that people have to be very aware of is the maturity of your child. And, you know, a lot of times when you start a kid too early, it's not that they won't win. It's not that they won't get better. It's just that they could burn out. A lot of times you get a kid, and I've seen it both ways. You see a kid that is just setting the world on fire. And the bad thing is the psyche of that athlete is, wrestling kind of came easy. It came so natural. And they don't understand that is an unusual amount of good. And life isn't going to be that easy. But wrestling is for you right now. And so it just kind of turns into this thing where they don't want to do it anymore because it's like, I'm good. I have fun. I have to work hard. But, you know, I'm good at something. And so they kind of lose interest. And there's also the thing where, you know, you can burn a kid out just by competition. You know, losing is not fun at any age, but also they can begin to get worn out just from the losses and the psychological damage of a loss. So you really just have to be aware that can happen both ways. Really just look at, you know, just be, you know, be, just be really involved with the kid and their sport, and make sure you stoke their passion. If they stop being as passionate about it, you know, you a good 6 months off, maybe you take a year off. It is not the end of the world. They can come back right back where they left off, and maybe the kids that they used to beat up on are really good now. That's fine. Your son can get really good again. Your daughter can get really good again. And you just have to keep that in mind. But what's most important is once they are not passionate about it, and especially wrestling, like fighting, is very demanding. Sometimes I feel like wrestling is more demanding on you than fighting because, you know, fighting is not like a 40 fights a year kind of sport. It's a 3-4, you know, at best, maybe 5 if you're Cowboy Cerrone. But wrestling, you get 35, 40 matches, you know, you got to make weight 20 times. That can be exhausting. That's exhausting just thinking about that. So you really got to make sure you just keep their passion intact. When they love the sport, you'll have to find a way to slow them down. When they don't love the sport and you're driving the train, they will get worn out much sooner than you want.
Wow, wise words from a former NC2A Division I champ and the former Bellator lightweight champ. Success in two sports. Respect, man. And that was great. Eloquently put, too. Always great to chat with you, Mr. Wonderful. In fact, dare I say that was wonderful, what you just said towards the wrestling community. I think a lot of people should pay attention to that because that was, like I say, I you said burnout. I remember Johnny Hendricks. You know, he started since he was little, and towards the end, man, he said wrestling and MMA just, it really wore him out. Like, he doesn't even like to watch much MMA or whatever. But you're right. I've heard that before.
And Johnny Hendricks, a perfect example. This man, when he came into MMA, he graduated ahead of me. I think I was already pretty deep in the UFC when he got going. And boom, he got on, and he just set the world on fire. And, man, he was knocking folk out, became the champion, had an amazing, probably all-time top 5 fight with GSP. And then, you know, I think probably for him, he has done so much competing in his life. He's done so much competing at a high level, at a really high level. He was really good. Most of his competition, he's been really good. And, you know, I'm sure it's not like a bad thing to be done. He can look back and say, hey, man, I was the champ in wrestling. I was the champ in MMA. When I was on top, couldn't nobody fool with me. You know, like I'm good now. Right. Much shorter career, still awesome. But, you know, when he says enough is enough, and I think also partly because of, injury as well. I know he had some injury in wrestling. Then I believe he hurt his knee. I think it was. He had surgery I think he was a title contender getting ready to fight, and he hurt his knee, and then came back, won title, a couple more title defenses, and then that was it.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Wonderful. Great talking to you. Can't wait to see your fight against Julius Anglicus March 12th on Showtime, 9 p.m. Eastern start time for that main card. Hope to talk to you again soon, bud.
Roger that. Thank you guys for having me.
All right, we'll see you. Well, just as I suspected, one of the most pleasant fighters to talk to since we've been doing this these past 15 years or so. It's always enjoyable. Something about the cadence of his voice, the tone of his voice goes, like he brightens up my mood.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy, man. And I'm glad that he wants to get some of these losses back. It's a little bit of a long road, but I think he can do it.
Yeah. So do I. Nemkov's definitely on his radar, but there was an opening there, although he did do the tap dance. That with him having that win over Teixeira and the fact that Teixeira did it till he was 40, you know, he got that win at 42 or 43 or something like that. I'm sure it basically perked up every higher weight class type guy, like the light heavyweights, heavyweights that can fight a little bit more into their later years. You know, that probably gives them hope that they can do this as long as their bodies are healthy. And like he said, hey, I didn't even start wrestling until I was 13. So I have 7 years less wear and tear than you thought. You know, basically it was the question I asked him about with him being 37 years of age. I just said, yeah, let's just say you started at seven. That's 30 years. He said, I started at 13, actually 6 years less. But would you like to see him back in the UFC, goes? Or has Bellator stocked the shelves enough with your Corey Andersons, your Anthony Johnsons, your Yoel Romeros, along with everyone else that they have, where maybe he's got a proper home there where he once won a belt?
I would rather him either stay there or go somewhere else. I don't really care to see him battle back in the UFC, but I would find him interesting in other places, in a PFL.
Maybe PFL?
Yeah, like a PFL I think would be funner. I'd have more fun watching him in a PFL than I would in the UFC.
Fair enough. The champion there is Antonio Carlos Jr., a.k.a. Shoeface, who fought as a middleweight in the UFC. Then he finds himself over at PFL, and he took down the whole season, man. I would argue that Phil Davis could handle himself on the ground with Antonio Carlos Jr. and definitely on the feet. That actually might be a good idea.
Yeah, and I think that would be a good fight. And you know, you got to fight a little bit more often. I don't know if that's something he's going to want to do, but I'm fine with him at Bellator. But if he did go somewhere, I think that would be fun to see him there.
Well, the nice thing is they've kind of done away with the two fights with one night. So nice. I like it, by the way. But nice thing in sense of if there is a fighter who's saying, hey, look, I only want to do this three or four times tops, then that might be something that appeals to him. I know he lost to Nemkov by a unanimous decision, but I thought the rounds were close a little bit, where if he just turned it on a little, maybe he could have walked away with his hand. You know, there's nothing wrong with zeroing in on the champion, Nemkov, but Teixeira is tempting. PFL's $1 million is tempting. Who knows? Let me see. He already beat... Yeah, Teixeira is no longer the champ. Or, sorry, he is the champ. If you check this out, goes, if you could take down a PFL season, you could go on socials and go, hey, you're looking at a millionaire who's a former Bellator light heavyweight light heavyweight champ. Oh, and by the way, I have a win over the current UFC light heavyweight champ. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just phrase it in a way where at that particular moment in time, you kind of have a little bit of a scoreboard going.
Yeah, you'd have to pull it out of him, though, because he's just not that guy. But you'd have, if you pull it out of him, I think he'd fist bump you. But I don't think he'd be the guy to say it.
He's so quiet. But I think we fired him up to go in there and you know, have a good camp here, whatever's left. He fights on March 12th against Julius Anglicus. Be on the lookout for that. Let's get back to the UFC. We're on the main card summary here. Armin Petrosian defeated Gregory Rodriguez. Split decision there. Armin Tsukian defeated Joel Alvarez. I got to say something about this. You know, Alvarez is 6'3", 155 pounds. Kind of reminds me of James Vick. Slick on the ground. But damn, goes that first round, he made no attempt to get up. That closed guard. Dude, what are fighters doing nowadays? You have to get up. I realize that in the co-main event, we have an example of someone from the bottom winning. I realize that. Wellington Turman defeated Misha Cirkunov. He threw up an armbar. It was so slick. It was really, really quick beautifully done. But I'm telling you, most of the time that shit don't work. And if anything, your nose gets caved in, your orbitals, just most of the time that shit don't work. You lose the round, you have a great chance of getting 10-8'd because he got taken down so early, and you just get demoralized. How do you come back off that stool in round two and you know, you're scared to throw a kick? You're just beaten up and exhausted. I don't know, man. Somebody said you got to treat it like they took you down on hot lava and you just got to get up or you're going to get burned.
Who said that?
I can't remember. It may even be Chris from Wales, mm-hmm. One of those sharps. You just cannot spend time on your back.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that was a nasty fight. And I thought I heard somebody say he broke a rib or something like that on that first takedown.
Maybe, man. He got bludgeoned. Speaking of bludgeoning, Priscilla Cajuera and Ji Yong Kim. Woo, man, they went at it. And you know that show that I like, River Monsters?
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time, he probably runs out of names to call these River Monsters, right? Or these episodes. But I remember one of them was like the flesh zipper or the flesh ripper. It was probably some fish in the Amazon or whatever, where if they get a hold of you, they just rip your flesh, you know? And dude, that's what Cachoeira did, because it was 1-1 going into round three, but I thought she was starting to tire and I thought Kim was starting to take control of the fight. And then Cachoeira went to forearms and elbows, and she did them in different ways. She did like forearm bashes. She did Muay Thai elbows where she kind of comes up in a circular motion and then does the cutting method, and then those upward elbows as well. And it was ripping the flesh of Kim. Now, she was firing back, and she basically closed up both of Cachoeira's eyes. Holy cow, goes, that was one of the most violent fights I've seen in women's MMA.
That was one of the ones where when it was done, I would have been okay if they just said, you know what, we're canceling all the other bonuses and we're just giving them, just letting them split that loot. Because that's exactly what you want out of your fighters. But I remember when the fight was over, feeling bad and almost feeling like you almost, how could you be the same person after that? You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
If I told you, dude, I was in a car accident and look, this is me. You would go, oh my God, man, how long is it going to take you to recover? Are you ever going to be able to do anything the way you used to? They basically did that, and now the UFC expects them to go back, heal, and do it again. And I hope they get taken care of, because that was one hell of a fight. I actually didn't agree with the judges' scorecards. I didn't feel like the elbows at the end were pretty mean, but I didn't feel like it was enough to overset what happened early in the round. And I also felt like Kim landed some pretty good strikes in between those barrages, where Cachoeira just decided to throw elbows nonstop. Like Lex Luger out there, man. But I thought she landed some stuff in between that too. What did you think of the decision?
Well, I needed Cachoeira, but I also had that feeling in my belly. I was like, oh no, they're going to give it to Kim. But Cachoeira had closed so strong. And in 2017, when ABC basically emphasized, hey, look, we're going to stop dilly-dallying and calling it anything but what it really is. We're looking for damage. But remember, they used to call it effective striking. Mm-hmm. Effective striking was the number one criteria. And then from there, if you couldn't gather, you know, points as a judge so that you could render a decision, then you started looking at effective grappling, octagon control or cage control of your Bellator or somewhere else, and aggression. And then in 2017, they said, all right, let's update it a little bit. And they're a little bit more clear in what they want, and that's damage. And as much as, like I just finished telling you, Cachoeira's eyes were closed up pretty good, man. The other gal, not only was she ripped apart her face, she was also wobbled. See, that was the thing, is she was wobbled like someone who was, you know, it could be removed from consciousness a little easier than I think Cachoeira. I saw Cachoeira as someone who was bludgeoned, you know, bruised and battered and exhausted. I saw Kim as someone who was the same, but also damaged and kind of like, you know, like I say, wobbled and maybe close to getting knocked out.
All right.
But If they would have said Kim, I just would have went, oh, that one stings, but you just live with it. Yeah, I wouldn't have been in an uproar or you know, tweeting out my disgust for the judges or nothing like that. That wasn't the case. If anything, I tweeted out, don't give them 50 grand each. Give them 100 grand each. I think Diego and Martin Campman once, Dana said, I'm going to give these guys 100 grand each. And yeah. I think one time he told Shogun, I'm going to pay your taxes. And that's exactly what I tweeted. I go, give them 100 grand each, pay their taxes. And what I mean by that is probably give them 125,000 each so that they can use 25,000 to pay the taxes for Kim, you know, back in Korea, Cachoeira back in Brazil. Give them the rest of the year off. Oh, and by the way, keep them in Vegas here for a week. Let them recover, man, in nice bathrobes, in a suite, and just let them, like, chill and, you know, let them get better for the next 9 months, and we'll see you in 2023. Neither one's really, like, a contender or near a title shot, and you said it goes. They won't be the same, but I thought they earned, man, they earned a lot of money, on a lot of respect, and hopefully a lot of money on Saturday.
You ever just wake up with a headache and it just annoys you? Imagine what their heads feel like today.
I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't seen that fight, go back and watch it. That was the featured bout of the night. We get to Wellington Turman versus Misha Cirkunov. Man, Misha Cirkunov was on top. You know, he's now as a middleweight. He's no longer a light heavyweight. He looked pretty good and in good shape. Wellington Turman had started off pretty good, but then Cirkunov was starting to turn things around. And I thought, uh-oh, he might catch the Brazilian and beat him up a little bit. And all of a sudden goes, that guy lifted his hips, swung that leg over quickly, and you could tell even before he tapped, holy cow, Misha Cirkunov's arm is past the point of no return, you know, where basically if you pull the elbow out enough, they can't torque the arm. And you could tell he did it so quick, I think I was like, oh, that's it, he's done. Joe Rogan style, even before he was done, because you could just tell, man, that was as slick as it gets.
It was like a video game, just like as if somebody had hit the right button, and all of a sudden he just went straight to that move. That was a fun fight for as long as it lasted. You know, it was a short fight, but it was still fun. But usually when you come off of a fight like that, it's usually some kind of a letdown. So I like that it was a finish there.
Another fight that was short was the Bobby Green fight versus Islam Makhachev. And what can you say? You know, Green took his loss like a man. At least he did up until the post fight. I think he was saying something about Makhachev. He finds him boring or something. I didn't find that fight boring. I'll tell you that much. Makhachev, I'm a believer in him. Don't get me wrong. But his last two opponents, you know, he's taking them on late notice. He still hasn't fought someone in the top 10. Yeah, maybe five or seven range. But either way, he's got such a commanding record and he's looked good in these fights that it's hard to deny that he's probably next for Justin Gaethje versus Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, it's hard to deny it. I, you know, it's weird as I still want to see that Beneil Dariush fight. I just felt like that was a really good fight for both fighters. But you got to give Bobby Green his props for taking the fight. A lot of people passed on it. He was there to do it. But at the same time, you're right. That's two short notice fights that Islam Makhachev has disposed of, but he's done exactly what you're supposed to do there. There's nothing else he can do. He really went in there and he mopped both guys up. I will say this, as far as the stoppage goes, I thought maybe he could have let it go a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, not a lot. I don't think
he covered up pretty good. It looked like a lot of punches were getting deflected.
Uh-huh. And then I don't know if you caught this, but there was a moment where Makhachev kind of grabbed onto the fence that helped him stay in control on top. And I thought that was a little bullshit, but hey man, I mean, it happens in all fights and I get it, but
Sam Al Jam from Pennsylvania said that Bobby Green kind of doing that little cute, hey, I'll put the Vaseline in my own nose, allows him to maybe spread it a little bit. I don't know. He was talking to me about it and I got to go back and see if he was able to apply himself, you know, because obviously some of the Vaseline, I imagine, stays on your fingers. Look at me pretending like I don't know. But if you can put it on yourself, then, you know, you obviously become a little bit more slick. I don't know that he's grabbing that much, to tell you the truth. But, you know, the first time that Makhachev did attempt to do it, he kind of tried to go over the top and like a front lock of the head, and he wasn't able to do it. You know, Green was able to get out of it. In the end, it didn't matter. The right guy won. He was a huge favorite, and he looked like it. And now he's speaking a little bit of English. I want to see the Beneil Dariush fight too, goes, but I think it's inevitable at this point. I think he'll, you know, with the other fight kind of upon us. Well, it's not till May 7th. Yeah, I don't think they'll make him fight Beneil Dariush again.
No,
basically. And again, there's a unicorn named Conor McGregor, and there's another popular fighter named Dustin Poirier. And I'm sure anytime the UFC can feature them in title fights, it's super lucrative. But I just think that that's played out, and I don't think that's gonna happen. So why even speak it into existence? I think Makhachev is clearly number one.
I think he is too. I mean, what are we holding out for? RDA? I think RDA is ahead of him, right? But even then, like,
RDA thinks only got the one win since coming back. All respect to RDA, though. He was a champ.
Rankings wise, isn't he ranked one spot ahead of him?
Yeah.
But
yeah, he'll probably be in the top five right now.
Yeah, I don't see them passing over him.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was a fun night. It was a fun night of fights. It was technically our colleague John Morgan's last day at MMA Junkie. And as I was going through Twitter, I saw Kevin Ioli post a pic of him, John, and Bruce Buffer, cage side. And John wearing his aqua blue, baby blue shirt. I'm not sure if he's going to continue that, because the double appeal to that, I believe, was he used to wear, because it's also a junky blue color, you know?
No, actually, I think he kind of clarified that. He said it just really came down to the fact that his kid, that's the shirt that his kid recognized.
Right, but he used to wear that color because it was the junky blue color. So then his kid was able to also pick him out. I mean, I guess it was both. Who knows? Maybe we should just let John speak on that, but we wish them well. You know, again, the news started to break last week, but now seeing it in those pictures, and, you know, Nolan King had a nice thing, nice little tribute to him as well. He said, this guy was like a mentor to me. You know, it's just, it's the reality of life. And so we wish him the best. And when we find out all the pertinent information about his new career, we'll gladly share it with you. And I'm sure many of you will continue to follow his work. He does great work. He's one of the top journalists in MMA for sure. No doubt about that. Mm-hmm. All right, the bonuses, and then we'll get out of here. So the bonuses, you want to guess some goes? I think some of them are kind of slam dunks, but take a guess.
I mean, the girls had to get one, right?
Yep, that was fight of the night.
Wellington?
Yeah. Terman got a performance of the night, and then the other one was Armin Sarukian, who defeated Joel Alvarez. I guess I should have let you guess. Maybe you could have went 4-0 on that one, but yeah, man, he bloodied him up pretty good, and that's that. So those are the bonuses. Now the UFC, apparently they do write some checks, and a lot of fighters do get something, and I think a lot of it has to do with, hey, man, did you just show up, and were you just a schlub all week? You know, did you just go through the motions and eat our food and use the UFC PI, not tweet, not give a damn, and then just, you know, are you yelling at the staff or what? Or do you come in here and sign some posters and, you know, sign a couple extras? Do you tweet? Like, I think they just want to see, like, what's your effort in this? We're in business together for one night. What kind of effort did you put? And I bet you goes, that has to do – that's the difference between, I'm talking about the younger fighters, ones that get 10 and 10 or 12 and 12. I bet you that's the difference between an extra $5,000 or maybe an extra $3,000 or maybe an extra $10,000. They're the ones that are a little bit more engaged and seem like they want to be there.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I think that's something that happens.
Yeah. So, again, note to the fighters. This is what we've learned. We try and pass it on to you. This weekend's obviously tremendous. You got your PFL Challenger Series. Look, we'll see if we can talk about that on Thursday. We'll recap what Challengers did on Friday on Thursday show, because we got to get out of here. But this week is tremendous. We got UFC 272 on Saturday here in Las Vegas, headlined by Jorge Masvidal versus Colby Covington. Yes, Goz and I will be doing a watch-along on March 5th. We have a preview show with, I believe, Farah Hanoun, a post-fight show with I'm not sure who, because that was what John Morgan was doing But of course, you'll spend 5 hours with Goz and I starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific for that watch along. Tell all your friends, especially the ones that don't order the pay-per-view, what more do they want? We're telling you exactly what's happening in real time. Plus, if I'm not mistaken, Goz, didn't we serve up a dish of 6-0 or 5-1 with picks
last night? We did really, really well. I don't know the exact number, but we did really well that night.
Yeah, and you can go to Tipico Sportsbook, especially those of you that live in Colorado or New Jersey, sign up and get a $750 sign-up bonus. Or if you live in Germany or Austria, it's also legal there. Tipico will do business with you. Again, take advantage of that sign-up bonus, and then wait for the picks to roll in. When they roll in, I'll give them to you, and we've been doing good as of late. So it's going to be a fun time on Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific for the watch-along. 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific for the preview show. And keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. And I promise you on Thursday, we will know more about John Morgan. We will also give you the PFL, you know, we'll do our little recap of PFL challenges that took place this past Friday and everything else that's going on in this crazy, wacky sport of ours. By then, Goz, I imagine Masvidal and Covington will have shoved each other once as well.
They might be already on the rematch by then.
I know, man. Anyway, we're out of here. Enjoy your nights. Enjoy your day, your night, whatever it is when you listen to the show, and go out there. Most importantly, always be a champion.